Hello, everybody, and welcome to a edition of not Red and Blue, although this is Graham Owen. It is the Tree City Sports Podcast. We are back. We have our host, Andrew Baker. What's going on?
That's right. I let Graham intro the podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. It's never happening again. So we're here to discuss the Browns draft, predictably. We're a little bit late with it, but we're kind of getting on to an every Thursday recording schedule here due to the way our work schedules work. So...
And here's the thing with the draft. When it comes to draft, and every time right after the draft, we always see analysts, even myself included, we always find ourselves prisoners of the moment, and we want to say, you know what, this was a good draft, or this was a bad draft, 2 or 3 days after the fact. So
yeah, we'll find out in 3 years.
Honestly, I think it's okay that we took like a week before the draft, because a week ago today, the Browns weren't picking. The Browns didn't do anything in round one, but the Browns still had a draft that was there, but... What's the point of initially analyzing it when we don't even know the full draft yet?
Well, you're right. And I think everyone's always rushing to be first to say something or first to believe something or first to comment. And I think drafts especially, I mean, you know, I kind of briefly touched on my opinions about mock drafts before the draft, but I think mock drafts are annoying. And I think there's so much content that, look, drafts are here to drive content. That's what they do, other than, you know, letting teams pick players.
Yeah, they also help the future of the organization. But for us, it's all about...
It's a huge media narrative.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I don't, you don't, nobody, John Dorsey, maybe God himself knows. But beyond that, no one knows how good a draft is going to be until years down the line.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is. That said, you know, there's still room for us to discuss the picks and the roster and our opinions about things, and that's okay. So
I think the best thing we could do is not talk about, like, all these people are like, I give an A on this draft. I give a B on this draft.
Yeah, it's stupid.
You can't grade a draft until, like Andrew said, usually at least 3 years into it, because some guys, mid-round picks, aren't going to play as rookies. Second year, they have to improve. And then by that third year is when you, as a player, it's like, okay, put up or shut up.
Yeah, you don't know this. Chad Thomas looks like the biggest bust in NFL history right now. But maybe after this next season, we'll be looking at him as a viable rotation player.
And I've been really hard on him, and Andrew's right. It very well could happen. But at the same time, the Browns had a draft, and I think Browns fans are just more used to these high picks and all these crazy players that they're used to getting. Like, last year we were spoiled when we had 4 picks in the top 35.
Well, hey, like John Dorsey said, Odell Beckham Jr. is a pretty great 17th overall
pick. Yeah, so I mean, the Browns technically did pick at 17, and they picked Odell Beckham. I'm going to give that pick, if we're going to go grades, I'm going to give that pick an A.
Yeah.
But no, the Browns still had picks, and they were important picks, because me and Andrew talked about going into this draft. The Browns pretty much fixed their offense. They got Odell Beckham Jr. They still have Duke Johnson, and they didn't trade him. He's going to be on this team.
They built offensive line depth.
We had offensive line depth signing Eric Kush and Kendall Lamb, and then we drafted another guy, which we'll get to. But for the most part, I mean, the Browns were set on offense. They didn't have to do a lot on offense. But defense, we were crippled pretty much in terms of depth.
Before the draft, you had discussed trading up for a tight end in an ideal situation. Neither of them were around long enough to trade up for.
Right, not even close.
But still, you know, we discussed needs and all that before the draft, and you and I were pretty much a two-man consensus that above all else, they just needed depth all around the defense.
Yeah.
And they needed young talent around the defense.
And that's not a fun draft for a lot of Browns fans. It's like,
well, whatever.
Defense is like, okay, but we fixed our offense and we drafted Odell Beckham.
You're going to draft a wide receiver because it's a deep class? He's never going to see the field.
Yeah.
And you already have high-end talent.
Look, I was okay with maybe taking a receiver in like the mid-rounds, fourth, fifth round. But if they had taken one in the second or third round, that'd be incredibly irresponsible. So,
well, the Browns' first one, two, three, four picks were all spent on defensive depth.
The Browns didn't pick an offensive player until the sixth round, and it was an offensive lineman.
They drafted one offensive lineman, and everything else was defensive depth aside from a kicker, which we'll get to. So, Greedy Williams was the Browns' first pick.
Yeah.
There was a lot of rumors about the Browns trading up from 49 to the late first round, the mid-second round, et cetera, et cetera. The Browns stood pat until 3 picks before their pick. They only traded up 3 spots for Greedy Williams. They gave up a fifth-round pick to do so, which is probably a slightly higher-than-average cost to move up 3 picks in the second round. But ultimately, when the Browns have 3 fifth-round draft picks and not a lot of major needs, and they no longer have a roster where anyone you draft is going to make the team by default.
Yeah, it's not like 2016, I think it was, where all 14 guys made the roster.
And that's not normal, but that's what the Browns were doing. But the Browns are now out of that phase. And so, you know, I'm not going to sit here and quibble over giving up one of your fifth round picks to move up to get a guy, especially when that guy is Greedy Williams, who before the draft, a lot of people considered to be a potential first round pick and at bare minimum, an early, early second round
pick. I mean, going into this college football season, he was a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Granted, and then the season came and.
Well, actually, let's get into that. So Greedy Williams is an athletic cornerback. He has all the talent, all the skills.
Athletic is putting it lightly.
So he's a playmaker.
He's incredibly athletic.
You said that he was considered top 10 pick, which is true. So what reasons were there for him being available where he was to the Browns? Because by all means, he's not considered to be a bad guy.
No. So here's the two factors I think were really the biggest thing. One, the first one was just the trends of the draft. As someone that follows the draft, and I've learned, you have to understand that there are trends in the draft. And John Dorsey even said that in his press conference after they picked Greedy, which was there were not that many corners being taken in the first round. One corner got taken in the first round, and it was the Giants trading up to 30 to draft a cornerback.
And it was a really deep cornerback draft.
Right.
And so a lot of people thought that cornerbacks could go early because there's so many good ones. But what ends up happening is teams say, well, I can go somewhere else with my first-round pick, and there will still be talent later on at that position.
It's the same thing with wide receiver. This year, two wide receivers went in the first round, and then a bunch went between rounds two, three, four.
Yeah, I mean, DK Metcalf.
He went 64.
Yeah, say what you want to say about him. He was considered to be a potential first-round pick, and he went, you know, last pick of the second round.
But there were trends. That first round, 20 of the 32 players selected were linemen, offensive or defensive linemen. So that was the trend. The best players in this draft, top end, were linemen. Then you get to the second through fourth round, you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot of good cornerbacks available.
And a lot of receivers.
Yeah. So it's like those rounds were very heavy on wide receiver and corner. And the Browns watched corners keep getting taken off the board. And for some reason, Greedy was still there. And I think the reason he was still there was there were some questions about effort at LSU, about whether he tried on every single play. And then there was also questions just about his tackling because he was a pretty poor tackler. And also part of that was effort-based. So he dropped, but in terms of his coverage skills, he's a really good coverage guy, and he didn't get a chance to show that much because he wasn't targeted that much last year because he was that shutdown corner for LSU. No one threw to his side. I think only there was not that many passes thrown at him. It was in the teens, passes thrown at him.
And the passer rating on those throws was not good, which is not especially especially uncommon in college. I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be a great NFL corner, right. But that said, you know, the scouting consensus is that he certainly needs to improve his effort, play to play, his consistency, his technique, of course, who doesn't, and his tackling. But I think, you know, initially, when you hear about his weaknesses, my first thought is, I wonder if he's Justin Gilbert all over again.
Yeah.
But he seems to come without the off-field concerns of a Justin Gilbert.
Yeah. And along with that, with this Browns regime, there's a lot better infrastructure in place compared to what there was when we were drafting Johnny Manziel and Justin Gilbert.
Once you draft Johnny Manziel, your organization becomes a clown show. We've been over this.
Yeah, but the Browns drafted players, and they already had players that were either on their team that were either alma mater, they're in the same alma mater as those players, or they were close to begin with. So Greedy was an LSU guy, and he knew both Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. And they were close.
You can bet those guys are going to give it to him on the practice field every day.
Yeah, he's learned in the SEC, which is the best conference in college football. I'm a Big Ten guy, but it's the best. He was guarding a lot of the best players in college football. A lot of guys that got drafted this year, he was covering. And on top of that, he's going to be going against Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry every day in practice. So he's going to get that practice. And he was already a good coverage guy. He's really fluid. He's able to coverage downfield. He's super fast. He ran a 4.43 for a cornerback, which is insane.
Athletically, he's an easy athlete. He's 6'2". He's got a 39-inch vertical. He's fast.
He's really smooth in his breaks. Like, he's able to get out of breaks, and like when receivers get on their routes, he's able to stay with them. He's able to mirror coverage. That's why the Browns took Denzel Ward last year. Denzel Ward didn't fit this prototypical like measurements of a corner, but those are the things you want. And I think me and Andrew have talked about that ad nauseum throughout a lot of this year, that it'd be really nice to have a young, tall cornerback to pair with Denzel because he is a smaller guy.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you can get a guy who has first-round upside, is a big corner, and who can also jump high opposite your smaller guy in Denzel Ward, and only have to move up three spots in the second round to do it, regardless of what concerns there may be about Greedy Williams, it's hard to complain about the pick.
The value was great. If the
Browns That's the thing. If you traded up in the early second round for him, maybe those concerns look a little more glaring. But the Browns didn't really have to move up very much to get him.
I think that's
the encouraging thing here.
Or if the Browns had not traded for Odell Beckham and they had had the 17th pick and they had taken Greedy, that would have been a reach. Because, like we said, the value of this draft with the corners was coming later on because there were so many of them and there were so many more important positions that if the Browns had taken a cornerback at 17, it would have been seen as a pretty big reach because they would have been like, okay, well, there was a bunch of other guys you could have taken in the second round that you chose not to.
Well, and look, if you're in college and you're as talented as Greedy Williams is, you can afford to take some plays off and not give maximum effort. But in the league, you can't do that. And I think, you know, he did slip further in the draft than he thought he would. And like you said,
I hope that's a chip on his shoulder.
This Browns team has infrastructure in place where there's leadership. I mean, Jarvis Landry is from his alma mater, like you said, and so is Odell Beckham Jr. And those guys, there's no doubt ever about their competitiveness.
Yeah, and their work ethic.
And also the Browns have a good defensive coaching staff. Yeah. And also Greedy Williams is coming into the year as the fourth cornerback.
Yeah, we're not expecting him to start.
And you know, I'm sure he'll see the field as a result of injury at some point just because the Browns' top three cornerbacks have all had injury issues. Or he might just
be better than one of the other two guys.
And that would be great. That would be ideal. He could beat out
Terrence Mitchell or TJ Carey.
Right. That would be ideal. But either way, my point is, you know, I think some have compared the pick to Justin Gilbert, but he doesn't come with the off-the-field concerns.
It's also not the risk of the eighth overall pick.
He comes with better production in college even than Justin Gilbert had. Justin Gilbert was a big-time, like, kick and punt returner, which Greedy Williams isn't, but If you're drafting a cornerback eighth overall based off kick and punt return, you're making mistakes.
Yeah.
So I think it's really hard to complain about the Browns filling a need in an ideal way, which, I mean, he's a perfect fit next to Denzel Ward. And they didn't have to trade up to get him very much.
And he can play any type of coverage too. So whether Steve Wilks decides to play a coverage a zone scheme like he did for a lot of his time, or if he adds more man, that's probably where Greedy excels better. But both of our corners, both Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams, in terms of our future, they can play. They're scheme versatile. So whether Steve Wilks stays here for a long period of time or he moves on at some point because he does such a good job with the Browns defense that he gets a head coaching job, those guys are scheme versatile and they can fit any type of set based on their athletic profile. And he was shown that he was able to play that because they ran different coverages at LSU. They mostly had him on man just because, well, he was the best cornerback on the field and no one could get past him.
Hey, and guess what? Maybe he's a bust. Who knows? And that's the NFL draft.
But in terms of where we got him, fantastic pick.
In terms of the value, you have to like it, yeah. In terms of value, the Browns' next pick, which is Sione Takitaki.
Great name.
Yeah. Well, the Browns got a lot of great names in the draft
in general. They very much did.
I think that Sione Takitaki, most people think he was a reach. You know, he's a guy who had off-the-field issues in college and then became a captain for BYU, which is a Mormon college.
Which is a big deal, yeah.
Which you don't become a captain on that team unless you're pretty clean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it seems like the Browns had some very clear priorities in this draft with the new defensive coordinator coming in, and that was to add speed to the defense all around. Greedy Williams is fast. Sione Takitaki for a linebacker is fast. The Browns linebacking core coming into this year is very slow.
Yeah,
I mean, Joe Schobert is a very good player, but he's not especially fast.
He's more smart than he is fast. Exactly. He's just better at understanding where the coverage is.
Yeah, and Christian Kirksey is perhaps ill-fitted to be a 4-3 outside linebacker in the modern NFL.
He's always been used wrong ever since we switched to a 4-3.
He's a tackling guy. He's not a speed guy. And 4-3, you know, our outside linebacker spot, the other one was the position that we said coming into the draft was the only starting position in the whole roster. It was up in the air.
Yeah, because it was going to be our Darius Taylor that was going to be the starter.
And maybe Sione Takitaki is the starter from day one. I have no idea if he's good enough for that yet. I would say probably not. But and then in the fifth round, the Browns drafted Mack Wilson, who's a linebacker from Alabama, who basically is an ultra-talented guy that had some attitude issues. And I don't think the Browns planned on drafting him. I don't think they expect him to be there. I think that basically when they were in the fifth round and saw him sitting there, they thought, well, shit, at a certain point, if he had this much production and this much talent, in the fifth round, we can gamble on him. And if he's a major issue in camp, you just cut him, no loss.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing that they did with Antonio Callaway. And my point is, I don't know if Sione Takitaki or Mack Wilson is ready to be an NFL starter right now.
Right.
Probably not. No. But end of the day, the Browns needed depth in the linebacking core because they had none. And they need speed in the linebacking corps because they had none. And these are both fast, hard-hitting, talented linebackers. And if one of them becomes a starter, then those two picks combined will have to be a success. You know what I mean?
Mack Wilson, if they had to start one of the rookies, he's probably the most ready. Because he faced the best competition.
And Mack Wilson's a lot more of a known commodity than Taki Taki. Taki Taki is one of those guys who the draft guys know, but the common fan had never heard of him. Mack Wilson was
a
little more on the radar because he played at Alabama.
Well, it's just Sione Taki-Taki. Well, yeah, he was at BYU, and B, like you said, he had a lot of off the field issues. So we didn't get the film on him that we got on Mack Wilson. We saw Mack Wilson for several years. We knew what he was, and he dropped because of attitude issues. And maybe he's also just maxed as a player, which that's always been something that people have said for Alabama players that they fear when they come out, they're maxed because you had great coaching with Nick Saban and a great facility.
If he had that much production at a high end in college in a fifth round pick, what more do you really want?
Yeah, at that point,
without the attitude issues, he's a second or third round
pick. You throw that dart at the dartboard every time, and you take that.
Without the attitude issues, he's a second or third round pick. And that's the same thing as Antonio Callaway last year. And look, John Dorsey has proven that he is willing to overlook these things if he thinks the value is right. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a question as to how many of these guys you can put on the same roster. But, you know, again, if there's leadership on the roster, and look, Antonio Callaway last year, by all means, from what I've heard, he was absolutely not a problem at all in the locker room.
Because we had Jarvis. That was the thing.
And that's what I'm saying is, you know, Christian Kirksey's a hell of a leader too. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
And like I said, is a fifth round pick. If he has these issues off the bat, you don't want to deal with it, you just cut him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Sione Taki-Taki, I mean, he might be worth that third round pick. I went back after he got drafted and I watched some of the plays from him. Bro, he can move.
He's aggressive too.
He can move and he can hit.
Yeah.
So if he truly has that stuff behind him and he's back on his faith, which he said has been a big reason for his turnaround as a Mormon, and then he was voted a captain and played well for a BYU team that did pretty well this year, I'm okay with the pick. Like you said, we have the locker room and he has the skill set to be a successful linebacker. But he has those traits necessary.
And look, maybe it was a reach, but if he becomes a good player 2 years from now, no one's going to be saying the Browns reached for him. You know what I mean? And that's just how the draft goes. It sounds very rote to say it, but if the player is good, it's a good pick. I think people are so concerned with value in the draft, and I don't have a problem with that. Like, Mack Wilson was a good value.
I think
so
had they
Grady,
flipped
but,
them, I think there would have been a different story. If Sione Taki-Taki had gone fifth round, I think maybe people would be a little bit less hard on him because he was a fifth round pick.
And if the Browns don't pick him in the third round, maybe he's gone by the end of the third.
Right.
You know, who knows?
But if you take Mack Wilson in third, maybe some people are like, wow, it's a reach for the attitude.
Yeah.
And stuff
I think
like
Taki Taki's a little more of an unknown, but I think he's certainly talented. And I think he could be a contributor from day one, maybe even not as a starter, but at least in certain packages.
The Browns could not have drafted enough linebacking depth in this draft.
Yeah.
They had zero depth after Kirksey and Schobert, they had zero depth because we both agree that Jannard Avery's not a linebacker.
Yeah, he's a hybrid pass rusher.
He's an undersized pass rusher.
Yeah.
He's not a linebacker. And we saw that last year when he was getting torched time after time in coverage because that's not his game. So they are like, okay, we're going to have to get guys that can cover. And these guys have that ability to cover.
Well, and again, I think, you know, our last pick or our last next pick, I should say, Sheldrick Redwine in the fourth round, who, by the way, again, just Sheldrick Redwine.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's such a sounds so fancy.
I'm more of a white wine guy myself, but if he's a good player, it's okay.
Sheldrick Redwine.
So he's from Miami. Basically, he is pretty much your prototypical in-the-box strong safety. He struggles in coverage. He doesn't have great instincts, but he hits the hell out of people when they get near him.
Yep.
So I think, you know, and he's very fast.
And apparently he's not bad in coverage as long as it's not like Jabril Peppers where you're playing him 15
yards. Well, that's
off.
The thing. It's basically the profile of his pick is kind of like Jabril Peppers without all the playmaking.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I think as a fourth-round pick, as a backup strong safety, that's pretty ideal. And, you know, Morgan Burnett is not a long-term option at strong safety.
Right.
And so maybe Redwine can become the starter at strong safety after a year or two. Because
or worse,
by all
Derek
means,
Kindred with
right. Death. Or, yeah, worst case, he's a killer special teams player.
Yeah.
And so with those four picks, Greedy Williams, Sione Taki-Taki, Sheldrick Redwine, Mack Wilson, you're kind of looking at the phases of the Browns offseason. The Browns got Odell Beckham Jr. because they thought, holy hell, the Giants are actually going to give him this for the package that we're offering. Let's do it now.
Yeah.
Then they addressed offensive line depth because they obviously didn't love the offensive line class in this draft. You know?
Then they went defensive line.
And then they signed defensive linemen, including trading for Olivier Vernon. And going into the draft, you're saying all the Browns need is defensive depth.
They need back seven,
and,
yeah.
Back seven, defensive depth. And you look in this draft, and this draft is heavy on back seven defensive depth. And yeah. I think that this is what makes a good general manager, is understanding the trends of the league and of the draft. And again, all these defensive players that John Dorsey and his staff picked were considered pretty good values for where they went. And Odell Beckham Jr., for the package we got him for, is a damn good value.
Yeah, and, of course it is. I would have done that deal every time.
And Olivier Vernon, on his contract that we traded for, that means we basically owe him nothing tomorrow if we don't want to,
it's a pay as you
is
go.
A good value. Mm-hmm. And Sheldon Richardson as a starting defensive lineman, only getting a year and a half guaranteed, is a pretty good value. And the point is, this is what John Dorsey does, is he acquires all these players that are a good value for what you're giving up for them, whether it be draft capital, money, et cetera, and all of a sudden, coming into the draft, he's got needs, and the draft he's going into is deep in those needs. And all of a sudden, you come out of the draft, and you're like, wow, now the Browns roster looks pretty freaking complete. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, Dorsey did a good job of playing this draft the right way, because like I said, had the Browns not traded for Odell Beckham, I think the 17th pick probably would have been a wide receiver, because he knew that they desperately needed wide receiving help outside of Jarvis Landry. I think had we picked 17th, we probably would have picked Hollywood Brown, the guy that the Ravens drafted 25th, because he's the most similar player, I think, to what they were looking for in an offense. So you're right. They really wanted to focus on that offense because they noticed the trends in the NFL that offense is how it's going. But at the same time, they knew that the defense in the draft was going to be there. They could at least have some depth. They had most of the starters taken care of. They needed depth, though. Or young guys that could eventually be starters, because that's how you build a team. You get young guys that could eventually be starters. Your guys that are starters play their contracts out. They leave because you don't want to pay them too much money, and you just keep going. Yeah. And that's why these teams like the Steelers and the Patriots and the Ravens have been successful for as long as they have.
Well, and once again, if these guys are good, they were good picks. If they're not good, they were bad picks. That's how it goes. Austin Siebert in the fifth round.
Cringe.
Go ahead.
You don't take a kicker in the fifth round.
Why not?
Because you can get a kicker in the sixth, seventh, or undrafted. And like you said, there were still players available on the board that could have helped the Browns defensively. They could have taken another defensive lineman. They needed defensive line help, and they didn't do it.
Well, this was clearly a vote of no confidence in Greg Joseph, I'm very much okay with.
And I get it. He missed extra points. He had some problems, but
he was an average kicker on field goals and a terrible kicker on extra points.
So you bring in competition. I get it. But picking him in the fifth round is not the way to do it. If you didn't want to make that pick, trade out of the pick.
Well, a kicker in the fifth round is obviously not competition. It's a guy who's expected to be a starter.
Yeah.
And I think the Browns basically said that they didn't expect to draft a kicker, but when Seibert was there in the fifth round, they thought he was really good enough to value that to be worth that pick. And
again, that's just my perspective. I might be wrong.
If you look, I mean, it's – we're not going to sit here and give a full scouting report for a kicker because God only knows, okay?
All I know is that he has a cannon for a leg and he was never really tested in terms of long field.
He's a great kickoff guy, which is useful. He's really accurate under 40 yards and he very rarely had opportunities over 40 yards. So at that point, he looks like a solid kicker. Maybe with more opportunities over 40, he becomes a stud. I don't know, okay? He's a kicker. I don't love kicker value in the fifth round, but if the Browns scouted him and thought he was a potential star kicker going forward, then screw it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
because at that point in the draft, the major needs for the Browns were defensive depth, and those needs had been addressed. And so maybe it's a chance where if you love a kicker, you can take him. You know, if he gets cut in training camp, it's going to look pretty bad. But
part of me felt like this was a pressure pick because the fans were really like to your thing, the fans were really frustrated with Greg Joseph last year.
Well,
so
I don't think Dorsey's making picks based with the fans.
But no, but I think that could push someone up higher than maybe a lot of people think. And again, if he does really well, I will totally eat my words. And if he's a good kicker, then that's the most important part. But maybe, I don't know if they think, okay, our offense is going to be so good, we might not need to have him kick 45, 50-yard field goals all the time. We might just need it to get into like inside the 30 and be like, okay, bro, kick the field goal. You're good. You can make these.
Yeah.
Because kicking is really about two things, repetition and confidence.
Where did Austin Siebert go to college?
Oklahoma.
So when he was at Oklahoma, he didn't really have to kick a lot of field goals. Why is that?
Because, I mean, for the last 2 years, he had Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray.
Baker Mayfield, leading the offense. Who's the Browns quarterback?
Baker Mayfield.
Oh.
Maybe I don't know the kind of relationship they have.
But, I don't give a shit. Yeah, it's a kicker. Anyways, we don't need to address the kicker anymore. We'll find out. If he's good, fine, whatever.
And then
We took depth picks, the 6th and 7th round. Drew Forbes and Donnie Lewis, offensive line and cornerback.
If anything, Donnie Lewis might has a better chance of making a team just because he's a corner. And because
Drew Forbes was Sports Illustrated's Prospect X, who they basically loved coming into the draft and didn't name him until after the draft. Mm-hmm. So if Sports Illustrated's a great drafting organization, then it was a good pick.
And the area scout that made the pick was really confident that he could play at a guard at the next level and maybe eventually be a starter. He's a 6th round pick from Southeast Missouri State. It's a flyer. And the Browns already had the depth. And then Donnie Lewis could make the team because like John Dorsey said when he drafted Greedy, you can never have enough guys that can cover.
Or he could get cut. Who knows? 7th round pick.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this break. And we are back. So there are a couple positions the Browns did not draft that we thought they may draft coming in. So right now the quarterback room is, of course, Baker Mayfield, Drew Stanton, and Garrett Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Stanton is basically a third quarterback, an ideal mentor type.
Yeah.
Garrett Gilbert is a complete unknown who played in the AAF and struggled in his time as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
They did not draft quarterback. They did sign an undrafted free agent who, you know, maybe...
He was a solid... Yeah, Bo from Purdue was solid. Yeah. I don't know much about him, but I remember watching him in the Purdue game against Ohio State. Yeah, she was really good.
Well, we know Stanton's going to make the team, and maybe one of those two guys makes the team. But I think...
I bet they'll keep all three.
Not drafting a quarterback, I think that Gilbert has a pretty good leg up on making the roster, whether it be as the second or third quarterback right now. So I think that's a little bit of a vote of confidence in him because I thought they could draft a guy in the 5th or 6th round.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. If in mini camps he doesn't perform well and they feel like they need to go get another quarterback.
They could trade for a backup. I guess.
Yeah. They could get a backup or they could sign one.
Someone who gets cut.
Mm-hmm. So they,
I mean, I think ideally you're not bringing in a guy late in camp.
No, I think for both of us, we were hoping they would draft a quarterback in like the 5th round or something.
Yeah. Obviously,
just as like a career backup for Baker. I really liked Clayton Thorson, the guy out of Northwestern. He got drafted as someone's backup and I'm like, wow, it's a really good pick. So, you know, it is what it is.
Maybe they like Gilbert.
Yeah, it is what it is. If they didn't, they had other priorities and then we didn't draft a running back, which to me means.
Well, Duke Johnson didn't get traded.
Yeah. Which means. Duke better suck it up because he's
Nick Chubb, Duke Johnson,
Kareem Hunt.
That is not a freaking bad running back room. And I still like Dontrell Hilliard, actually.
God, imagine the wishbone formation with those three.
Oh, my God. yeah, I mean, look, maybe Duke Johnson will get used properly in the first half of the year.
Or he'll get traded before the season starts. We don't know. Probably not.
My dream is that they actually just use Duke Johnson properly.
I would like him to stay, but he's already kind of made it clear that he wants out.
I don't blame him, though.
But I don't blame him.
He was committed to the team as anybody when they were losing, and they never used him correctly, and then they just freaking signed a domestic abuser. It's like, you know?
Yeah, so I get it with him. So I hope he stays, because like you, I'm a huge Duke Johnson fan. We love Duke Johnson.
That said, if they don't trade him, they didn't need a running back.
Yeah.
So.
And then wide receiver, I liked wide receiver just because of the depth of the class. And even Kelvin Harmon, that guy I brought up, he lasted till the 6th round. And I was surprised the Browns didn't draft him. But
how about your boy Debo?
He went 2nd round to the 49ers, which I'd heard was pretty much.
He went pretty early 2nd round, did he not?
He was the 34th pick.
Yeah, so and you pick. Said you thought he was a late first, early second guy. You thought he'd go mid-second. So it looks like you had an NFL team that agreed with you.
I mean,
there was the second wide receiver off the draft. I mean, that's pretty big for Debo.
Third? Because it went Hollywood Brown went 25th overall to the Ravens. Yeah. Yep. Then 32 was N'Keal Harry to the Patriots. Yep. And then it was him.
But, so it looks like the NFL was in line with you about Debo.
I mean, he's a good player. And I heard he was connected to the 49ers for a long time. Like they really liked him because of exactly the type of player he is. So
yeah,
I said he could have brought the same skill set that Antonio Callaway did, but better. But, you know, I'm okay. The Browns didn't draft a wide receiver. It is what it is. They didn't need one.
Yep.
Our top four is set. We have.
Well, yeah, we've got the top four.
And then we can let Willis and Damien Ratley battle
future all-pro Derek Willis.
I think
– honestly, Willis –
if I had to guess, I think he would win out of the two.
Honestly, Willis and Ratley is your competition for the last wide receiver on the roster is pretty good.
Well, do you think they're only going to carry 5?
I guess they carry both, but I don't know.
Well, I'm not saying them specifically. And
well, I think Willis can play special teams.
Yeah, Willis I think will make the team because he can do both.
I love Willis.
And then – Jalen Strong's a flyer. They could bring someone else in. as like a fifth receiver?
I don't think so.
No, like a young kid.
A flyer, maybe.
Like a, or like they get another undrafted free agent or someone gets cut in camp or something.
I was on board with them not drafting a wide receiver. There was a lot of wide receiver depth in this draft, but I just didn't see any need at all. And I didn't want a guy who was decent to lose his roster spot for no reason.
You could have taken one in the fifth or sixth round just as like a
– My thing is, why though, you know?
I mean, it's the same risk as taking a kicker in the fifth round. Either he pans out or he doesn't.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Yeah. I hear you.
But I get
Joseph
it.
Joseph sucks. Anyways.
I get why we didn't draft a wide receiver. We were already set.
The thing that surprised us the most is not drafting a defensive lineman.
Specifically interior.
Yeah. I mean, this draft was thought to be defensive line heavy early, and maybe the Browns just didn't like the depth. Or maybe the Browns thought that their defensive line was going to be pretty good as it was, and they just valued other things more.
Yeah.
You know?
I think this is
what I'll say. You know what? I think they might be giving Chad Thomas a prove it year.
I think they are too.
He was a third round draft pick last year, so they obviously liked him enough to draft him the third round. He was hurt in training camp, so he lost a lot of reps, and it seemed like he was pretty much behind the eight ball from the jump.
Yeah.
And I think
there's also questions about whether his full commitment is with football or not.
No, we're gonna find out. But also, you know, he's drafted as a defensive end, and there's not a lot of room in the defensive end room for the Browns.
He's also 280.
I mean,
pounds.
That's what I'm gonna say is we've got Myles Garrett, Olivier Vernon, Chris Smith, and Anthony Zettel, and that's a pretty stock defensive end room.
And
but who will play some
who counts as an edge.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Chad Thomas, like you said, is 280.
He's
so,
too big to play defensive end.
Well, yeah, but also
he's not athletic enough.
I think he could be used on the goal line.
Yeah.
And I think he could be used inside in passing downs to rush the passer, because that's what we're going to discuss is the Browns don't have a lot of interior defensive line depth. That's one of the only positions on the whole roster where I would say they're definitely lacking depth.
I would say that and maybe a free safety behind Demaryius Randle, just because the safeties that they have picked, whether it's Redwine or getting Eric Murray or getting
Corey
Burnett, we don't have someone that can back up Demaryius Randle.
And Randle has had some injuries.
And if he gets hurt, that's a big deal because he controlled the middle of the field so well last year for us.
Yeah, maybe they put Greedy back there.
So I really wanted us to draft someone that maybe was a free safety, like cornerback hybrid, but defensive line was really the biggest thing because after Sheldon Richardson and Larry Okunjobi, it's Trayvon Coley,
Devereaux Lawrence, and a bunch of pretty much bums.
Carl Davis.
Yeah, so I think maybe Chad Thomas gets more of a look inside in training camp just to see if he can kind of push the pocket and hold his own against the run enough.
And it might fit him better because
but I think there's definitely, coming into this draft, we were thinking that we needed some defensive line depth. And if we did draft defensive line, that he might be on the roster bubble. And he still might be on the roster bubble, but I still think he is. I think he is too, but I think he's got a pretty legit chance. He has every opportunity to prove himself now.
Yeah, and if he gets cut at the end of training camp, then clearly he either wasn't committed or he just wasn't talented enough.
Someone else broke out ahead of him,
But it's smart that you said about him playing inside because we looked at his stats. He was not a fast runner. He ran a 4.92 40 time.
Yeah.
And playing at 275, 280 pounds as a defensive end is literally impossible. And then people will say,
in a 3.4, sure. But
and then people will say, Myles Garrett's 275 pounds. He's legitimately an alien.
Yeah.
That's
well,
not
and coming
fair.
Into the draft, he's like a 4'6 guy that weight.
That's not fair to have someone who is that same size, but who is a generational athlete.
Coming into the draft last year, Chad Thomas was thought of as being either a 3'4 or a 4'3 end. And I think looking at it, maybe he's more of just kind of a jack of all trades along the defensive line. But I don't know. There's so little tape on him that who knows, you know?
His body seems like he can't put a lot more on it. So I feel like what you said is a good point that he might have to go play inside because it looked like he was already kind of maxed out.
They're lacking physically depth there, and he's got an opportunity is my point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other than the Browns or including the Browns, you're the draft guy. Is there anything else you really wanted to just kind of discuss or comment on after the draft? Because I'm pretty much good myself.
I think it's just really interesting the trends of the draft and how it went. Like for a long time, we've talked about offense being such a big thing in the NFL now, and it was, but this was not a skill position heavy or like high end skill position draft, and people did not panic. And
you don't think Daniel Jones is high end?
Oh God, he's by far the worst pick of the first round, going number six, at least for me. If he pans out, it's a great pick.
You don't like trading Odell Beckham for a late first,
and
a second, and a safety
for Eli Manning light? Yeah, but there were some reaches. But I think the main point is, teams are focusing in the trenches a lot because they're realizing how important it is to both get to the passer and protect the quarterback. And you saw, like I said, 20 of the first 32 picks were defensive linemen or offensive linemen. And then you saw that people, as the positions get deeper, wide receiver has been getting deeper as a position because more and more players are people are playing the position and more players are getting time on the field as wide receivers. So you're going to see value drop a little bit when there's deep positions like that. And I think for the Browns, they took a really good advantage of that. And a lot of teams took a good advantage of playing the board and not making crazy picks. Like, look, this year for quarterbacks, there wasn't any crazy trade ups for quarterbacks this year. There wasn't. Kyler Murray went number one. He was going to go number one. Then Daniel Jones went six. From what we've read afterwards, that seems like that was going to be the pick.
Yeah.
Dwayne Haskins fell to 15. There was no trade up for him. Drew Lock fell to 42. The Broncos traded up for him, but that was after they had traded down from 10 to 20 when they thought about picking him. Picked Noah Fant, the tight end from Iowa, then went back to another pick, traded back up, and then got Drew Lock.
Well, and I think the consensus about this draft is that there was only one quarterback, Kyler Murray, that was really that much of a first-round talent at quarterback.
He's the only guy that's probably going to play right away.
I think the teams maybe have learned from mistakes of previous years of teams drafting guys and reaching for them and giving up a lot of resources, because then if you draft a quarterback who's not that good and you give up a lot of resources to do it, you can't surround him with high-end talent. And if you have a marginal quarterback, you have to have a great roster to win.
Yeah, so I think the best part about this draft, and it went towards the Browns, is that a lot of these players that they valued where they felt like it was where a lot of teams felt it. So they saw the run and they made a good point on it. And a lot of teams, when they started seeing runs on talent, they made a big priority to move up. The Philadelphia Eagles picked 22nd. The Texans had been rumored for months to take an offensive tackle, and it was probably him. They traded up one spot ahead of him to get Andre Diller, the offensive tackle for Washington State. And then Houston got stuck drafting a guy who, by most people's accounts, was a late day two, early day three pick. So understanding the runs and then understanding what positions were important in the draft was really big, because it also helped the Browns shape their own draft. You saw a lot of people pick players that maybe the Browns weren't going to take, so it pushed people down their board, like Greedy. Greedy got pushed down that board because offensive linemen and defensive linemen were such a big thing for teams that they kept getting picked, and the Browns were good on those positions. So he could sit there until whatever it was in the second round and be like, oh, wow, Greedy's still here. I can trade up for him and not give up much. And he did it.
Yeah. Like you said, like we both said, the Browns, if you would have told me the Browns traded up 20 spots for Greedy, I wouldn't have been that mad, but they traded up three.
So teams are getting a lot smarter especially the Browns with John Dorsey at manipulating the draft and understanding what players are going to go. And in the NFL now,
quote unquote, letting the draft come to them.
Yeah. And for the Browns, that's going to be big for the next few years, because as these players leave, you're going to have to know which parts of the draft are good and supplement it elsewhere. And you're not going to be, and hopefully if we're the Browns, we're not picking in the top 20 anymore. We're picking in the late 20s because we're in the playoffs.
Hopefully we never draft in the top 20 ever again.
Well, now you're just lying to
everybody. Okay, fine. At least the next 20 years. How about that? We'll be back next Thursday. Always check out treecedrecords.com, at treecedrecords on Twitter. I'm at @abaker_sports. He's at @gtmohan. Champions League is finishing up. Premier League is finishing up.
We are going to have a podcast this weekend. We're going to give this podcast time, let everyone listen to it. And then this weekend.
Let it marinate.
Yeah. And then this weekend, we are going to probably do that podcast and release it either Sunday or Monday. So look out for Red and Blue. We'll have Cavs to talk about soon, because of the draft lottery.
We're 12 days away from hearing Zion Williamson will be a Cav. But I'm excited.
In terms of the Browns, this is kind of a last podcast until July type of thing for the Browns. I mean, this is the time of year now from the end of the draft until training camp starts that unless something major happens, there's not going to be a lot of Browns news. The Browns have pretty much drafted the players.
Is news, it'll probably be bad.
Yeah. If we hear Browns news, like Andrew said, it'll probably be bad. So we're still going to do Brown stuff, but it's going to be a little bit of a break. Get ready for some Cavs coverage. It's going to be lit.
Zion. We need you.